following program is sponsored by House of Prayer.
House of Prayer Ministries continue to bring the message of the unadulterated gospel all over the globe. From the United States to Russia, from Latin America to Europe, we are a church committed to the preservation of biblical principles.
To the House of Prayer in America, you prayed for us. You thank you so much for your prayer.
Every time out of prayer, pray to encourage and bless.
You deposited in us a spirit of evangelism, which grew like fire.
You will see us at hospitals, nursing homes, and homeless shelters, at food banks, orphanages, and prisons. We're actively ministering in our communities and everywhere we go. With affiliates across all continents.
This is Levi Newman, reporting live from Jerusalem.
It was just a blessing to be able to be somewhere else and just to be able to witness to people and pray in a different country.
When they first built the church in Mexico, they go out.
And not only Mexico, but Brazil.
There are men and women all throughout El Salvador that long for the missionaries, the brethren, to come back to see them again because they saw something different.
With affiliates across all continents, we faithfully encourage pastors, workers, and congregations in churches and synagogues in many countries.
Every time that he was preaching, he would call me. He said, "Hey, you and your church, I need y'all to pray for me." He didn't have nobody else to pray for him.
We are a church without prejudices. We are a church without boundaries. And we are a church of all nations. Welcome to the Women's Hour. I am Natalie Diaz. Thank you for joining us tonight. As always, this program is dedicated to Moriah Michelle Dennis. If you listened to last week's broadcast, we left off the story of Ruth as she came home from gleaning in the field, carrying some 30 pounds of barley. Tonight, we will focus on being selfless, but not gullible. We will also learn a thing or two about the customs and laws of the time. And we cannot forget the practical application. So Ruth came home. When Naomi saw just how much she had gathered, she wondered where she had gleaned. Who'd be so kind as to leave so much behind? Ruth explained that the man's name was Boaz. Naomi recognized the name. He was a close relative. Toward the end of the book, we find that there was only one relative closer to them than Boaz. This, along with chapter 2, verse 20, can lead us to believe that Boaz may have been a younger brother of Elimelech, Naomi's late husband, who was now showing favor to the widows of his brother and nephew. In ancient times, the term brother and father were used for near or far, present or past relatives. An ancestor was called a father, not a grandfather. For example, in relation to King David, all his descendants were called sons of David, and they were all commended or reproved according to the state of their heart and their works, in contrast with the heart and works of David their father. I wonder if the tenderness of heart in David was passed down to him by Ruth. Our DNA carry a lot of our physical traits, but what do we know? Let us cultivate good habits. Peradventure, they will become ingrained in us, and to be passed down to our little ones. Then again, I do want to refrain from pointing too far into the future, because no man knows the day nor the hour. Just like the early church, let us live one day at a time, because this could be the day. What we ought to say is, if God will, we will do this or that. Notwithstanding, let us cultivate good godly habits today. God willing, someone else will benefit from them. At the very least, my own soul is benefiting from it today. You see, time goes by so fast. We can all look back and see how the choices of yesteryears have affected our lives today and the lives of others. Before we knew it, those things we saw in the distant future came and went and are now in the past. For this reason, I want you to hear the testimony of a man who, for many years, has planted good seed in the lives of the most important members of the church, the children. Children are very gullible and vulnerable. Hence, we are accountable to furnish them with truth and with the tools to keep them safe from falling prey to evil influences and hurtful people. As they grow up, they naturally feel the need to leave the shelter of home. Who remembers the disappointment of growing up? Finding out that so many things were a lie was a painful experience. Well, here is a man who used his time wisely, who can look back and say, I presented to our little ones the truth of God in a way they will never outgrow, nor equate to a fairy tale. As you listen, notice how he felt the responsibility to teach from the Bible properly. Let's listen.
I think I was approached a couple of times by the pastor, to teach Sunday school, or would you be interested in teaching Sunday school? And I took it to prayer. I told him, I said, yes, sir, let's do it. So, and that was a blessing. Sunday school was fantastic, you know, because it forced me to study the Bible like I really needed to, you know. I mean, I was reading the Bible, but they give you that lesson, and then you're responsible to teach some young souls, or try to teach some young souls, some boys, a lesson the next Sunday. So I really had to, you know, study, go break it down and look up the words, all this stuff. So it really helped me a lot. And then the boys, I mean, the kids are fantastic. Whether they listen or not, I don't know. Whether they behaved or not, they're kids, it didn't matter. Something got in there, you know. And unfortunately, yeah, our grandson had to be, and have his papa as a Sunday school teacher. So, Daniel, this got to be terrible that you got your papa as a Sunday school teacher. And he said, well, it's okay, you know. So as long as you treat them all the same. But yeah, Sunday school was a blessing, for sure.
Thank God for a good Sunday school teacher. But let us not forget, before God, and according to Scripture, parents are the ones responsible to raise and protect their own children, not the church. Sunday school is a place to reinforce godly principles. Parents are supposed to be actively teaching their own children already. In Sunday school, to treat them all the same is of the utmost importance. Can God find the church where there is no big eyes nor little U's? What a beautiful sight this must be, to behold a place where we're all equal as we come together to worship. Once we leave the church building, however, we cannot fault the clergy for how people's lives are led. The sower goes forth to sow. Let us be good ground sincere, pliable, and fertile for the good seed to germinate, grow, and bring forth good fruit. It was the fruit of Ruth's life that caused Naomi not to see her as a Moabite. She called her my daughter, as though she was her own. As for Ruth, she wasn't focused in any advantage or disadvantage her skin color may bring to her. She wanted to be known for who she was, not for what she looked like. Ruth's virtuous behavior was breaking through the reservations people may have had in dealing with her before. It wasn't her fault that most Moabites had such a bad reputation among the Jews. Some aspects of culture are really best left behind. She wasn't bitter against the Jews because of how the past went. This was her generation, and she was ready to make a difference. Ruth's kindness had helped Naomi cross the ethnic line. Naomi was now colorblind. She only saw her as Ruth. The name Ruth means a friend, and much more than a friend. The Bible says she was a daughter-in-law better than seven sons. Ruth had proven chaste and faithful to God. She didn't look for a husband among the young men. This implied that she might still be young herself, and maybe be good-looking. What a rare jewel we have here. Young, fair, and chaste. This is very uncommon, especially nowadays, when, if this was the case, instead of being honored, you'd be ridiculed, shunned, or labeled as holier than thou. Of course, no one can change their past. Only God knows what Ruth went through in Moab. But her past was no longer her present. That permanent change had taken place in Ruth's life was evident. I wouldn't be surprised if people had taken advantage of her in her younger years, when she was gullible. Thank God she met Naomi. Not everyone finds someone who has their best interest in mind. The Bible actually says that people are prone to seeking their own selfish interest. So it exhorts us to look out for one another. Read it in Philippians chapter 2. Pay special attention to verse 21. This is why, here at God's Heritage, we endeavor to supply our listeners with godly understanding, so you cannot be deceived by cunningly crafted speech that sounds so close to the truth. Ephesians 4 and 14 puts it well, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro, and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the sleight of men, and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. We want you to read the Bible for yourself, with understanding and critical thinking, so you can make right choices for yourself. Yes, we need pastors, but salvation will never cease to be an individual experience. What are you going to do if you have no one to turn to? Why wait until you have no one to turn to? You can turn to God for help right now. He is the God that answers prayer. It is never easy to face things alone. And honestly, we don't have to. Even if we had no one around, the Bible speaks of a friend that sticks closer than a brother. The Bible also says that better is a neighbor who is near than a brother far away. Prayer is one breath away. I want to take a moment here to let you listen to a lady who found out just what a blessing it is as a military spouse to have godly fellowship, encouragement, and most importantly, to have prayer.
You need a church family. You need a pastor to go through a time such as a deployment, because you're fearful. It was a time where, you know, people were dying every day over their soldiers were being killed. I was afraid. I didn't have anybody to go to. I mean, my family, they didn't understand, because nobody else had been in the military. There was no experience with the military life. So my husband went through two deployments. The first time, we were not in church, and it was definitely different than the time that we were in church. When we were not in church, I did have my family to help me, but I did not have a church family. But the most important thing was there was prayer here. It was prayer. Our pastors were praying for our husbands. We were praying for our husbands. I'm not going to say I didn't pray for my husband the first time, because I knew about prayer, but it was different. Having Christian friends is totally different. And those influences, you didn't have to worry about your children hearing something crazy, you're seeing something crazy. It was a godly environment, godly women together, no gossiping, nothing crazy. It was just a blessing to me, because it's hard being a mom to children. Your husband's deployed, you're trying to be mom and dad, you're having to make all the decisions, you're trying to do everything right, you're trying to raise your children right, you're trying to make sure they have everything they need. And without the church, without my brothers and sisters, it just would have been, without my pastors, it would have been just so much harder, so lonely, so afraid. But just having the family of God to help me, it made all the difference.
There is nothing more important than prayer. Prayer is what brings love into us and what makes all the difference in the world. Why is this? Because prayer makes God's presence our companion until we see Him face to face. Ruth gave us an example of a true, faithful companion and friend. She is a picture of the born-again experience. I even wonder if Ruth was really her name from birth, or if Ruth became her name, her new name, because it was so fitting. Regardless, Ruth was no longer a Moabite. This is not to say one nation is better than another. Egypt, Babylon, Moab, and other nations were used to symbolize the world and its culture. Their gods and their culture were pagan in nature. Their practices and rituals entailed the most grotesque and lewd behaviors. This is something Ruth would have nothing to do with and would not be identified with anymore. The end of barley harvest had come. Instructed by Naomi, Ruth went to inquire of Boaz if he would follow the law of Moses to raise up seed for his kinsman who had died. Ruth here was doing the whole nation of Israel a favor in preserving the lineage of her late husband. Who would have known that King David was going to spring from her decision? So Ruth went and met Boaz in the threshing floor. In Ruth 3:9, he said, "Who art thou?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." The phrase "spread thy skirt" uses the Hebrew term kanaf, which can also be translated as a wing or the overspreading of a garment. In those days, And even to this present day, when a Jew marries a woman, he throws the skirt of the end of his tallith over her. This is to signify that he has taken her under his protection. What Ruth was saying is, cover me under your covering of a husband's protection. In so many words, she was asking Boaz to take her in marriage. Boaz's answer to Ruth is found in Ruth 3:10 to 13. Verse 11 being the verse in which Ruth is expressly declared as virtuous. Ruth's light shone very bright and could not be hid. She was a level-headed young woman. You can tell her first marriage taught her a lot. She ended up a young widow. But unlike Orpah, she didn't run back to a man. She ran to God. And God in time provided everything she needed, including the right husband. This is not to imply that there is such a thing as Mr. Right. Notice, at the end of the book, Boaz is not even mentioned, except for genealogy purposes. This was Ruth's story. Sure, they may have had happy moments together. This is perfectly normal and has its proper place in this life. But, Christian or not, if you try to make this world heaven, you are in for a rude awakening. As we draw near to closing today's broadcast, we see that if Ruth was truly virtuous, this must have been because she was truly selfless. If she looked at things carnally, she would have collapsed under the weight of the circumstances. Even here, one more obstacle is made known. There is a nearer kinsman than Boaz. Boaz makes a vow to Ruth by using the words, "As the Lord liveth," appealing to God as a witness of his sincerity. He will find out first thing in the morning if the other relative will redeem his brother's inheritance or not. If not, he will. As if divinely scripted, that kinsman shows up at the gate. Boaz made clear the conditions in which their brother's land is to be redeemed. He has to buy it back into the family, but under his brother's name, and to marry his widow. The unnamed kinsman refuses to mar his own name and his inheritance. Philippians 2:21 says, "For all seek their own." But Boaz had apparently fallen in love with Ruth. He redeemed all that was his brother's and fulfilled his promise of taking Ruth to wife. The book ends with the birth of Obed, the son of Boaz and Ruth. Notice that even though Obed was supposed to be called the son of Mahlon, the son of Elimelech, he was not. Here we see that God makes the rules. He is unchangeable in his holy nature. He is the moral law that can never be changed nor broken. He will never behave inordinately. But this particular precept had nothing to do with morality. It was there to preserve land so that some mega rich person wouldn't take it all for himself. Boaz's selflessness was rewarded. When we read the genealogies in the rest of the Bible, Obed is the son of Boaz and Ruth. So we close with this. We never know what the future holds, but what we can do is make the right decisions today. Join us again next week for a special edition of the Women's Hour. This program is dedicated to Moriah Michet Dennis.